From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. In our first half hour today, a live conversation with outgoing Governor Chet Culver. We'll follow up on his condition of the state address earlier this week, get his take on his accomplishments over the last 4 years, and have him answer a few of your questions. Then, a conversation with two incoming department leaders in our second half hour. We'll talk with Chuck Palmer. He takes control of Iowa's Department of Human Services. And Debbie Durham of the Department of Economic Development. Governor Chet Culver, live in our studio, right after this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and in just a few minutes, we'll have Governor Culver in our studio in Des Moines live. He's just arrived, ran a little bit late today. As the governor gets situated in our studio, we want to remind you that you can have a question or a comment for the governor in this first half hour as he prepares to leave office within the next 24 hours. Tomorrow is the inauguration. 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Until the governor gets into place in our studio, a related topic here, the Iowa Supreme Court's new Chief Justice says the negative reaction to their ruling on same-sex marriage threatens to weaken the entire court system. Justice Mark Cady delivered the annual condition of the judiciary yesterday at the State House. Iowa Public Radio's Janine Beck reports Cady used the speech to defend the marriage ruling, but failed to dampen opposition.
Justice Cady said he wanted to address certain misunderstandings about the role of the court in government. He says unlike political institutions, the courts serve the law, not the interests of constituents or special interest groups, and he says they cannot be swayed by the electorate's reaction to a particular decision.
The Iowa Supreme Court has many times in the past decided questions involving civil rights that were once controversial, yet over time those cases have become a celebrated part of the proud and rich Iowa history of equality for all.
The address to the legislature was Cady's first since becoming Chief Justice after voters ousted his three colleagues in November. He defended the judicial nominating system and promised greater transparency in order to ease the public's concerns about the process. He announced the Iowa Supreme Court will take the unusual step of holding some of its oral arguments in communities across the state, and then seemed to issue a challenge to the court's detractors.
Let us go forward with greater openness, not only in the way that we all do our work, but in what we know and what we understand today about each other and the world around us. And let us, too, go forward with a new understanding that rhetoric does have meaning, and with an understanding that rhetoric must be responsible.
For the second day in a row, the members of the Iowa Supreme Court drew loud and lengthy applause from the House gallery. More than 120 members of the group Justice Not Politics attended the speech, wearing stickers reading Support Our Courts, including former Democratic Lieutenant Governor Sally Peterson.
We're very concerned about this really, I think, irresponsible talk of impeachment. We don't want to see the process misused.
Peterson said she hoped Cady's speech gave lawmakers a better appreciation of the separation of powers between the three branches of government. But Republican Representative Duane Allons of Hull complained the civics lesson was overdone. He said it felt like a preschool primer.
I'm not sure it's going to change any viewpoint of people and what is kind of brewing now. Maybe it even gave a little more of a poke in the eye that people are going to be upset with that kind of lecturing in this body.
Allon says if and when articles of impeachment are drafted, he will support removing Justice Cady and the three other remaining members of the Iowa Supreme Court. But the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, Richard Anderson, says such a vote is unlikely. The Clarinda representative describes the impeachment supporters as a passionate minority. At the State House, I'm Janine Beck, Iowa Public Radio News.
And this is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow, Terry Branstad will take the oath of office to become, once again, governor of Iowa. The past 4 years, Chet Culver has served as Iowa's governor, and today marks Governor Culver's final full day in office. He joins us now from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Des Moines. Governor Culver, thank you again for taking the time to be with us.
It's great to be with you, Ben. Thanks so much for having me on.
I want to reach out to our listeners quickly if you have a comment or a question in Governor Culver's final hours in office, 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Share with us, Governor, please, some of your thoughts as your final hours as governor pass here.
Well, you know, we are busy moving out of both the Capitol and out of the governor's residence. So I've literally been packing this morning at Terrace Hill, and excited though about what the future holds. I'm very passionate about energy security and renewable energy, and I believe that that's the most important issue facing our nation today is energy security. And I hope to lend a voice to focusing even more, not only in Iowa, but across the United States in terms of renewable energy. I think we've shown the country what's possible here in Iowa if we have the public policies that match the unlimited opportunities. For us in Iowa, that's been primarily wind energy, where we're now producing 20% of our power from wind, just shy of 20%. That's up from 5%. Just 4 years ago. And so I hope to really continue in that exciting emerging area of the renewable energy sector.
You've mentioned this before, this interest in renewable energies. In what capacity do you expect to be working in that area once you leave office?
Well, as an advocate, first and foremost, as a voice. And I've been honored and privileged to serve as the chairman of the Governor's Wind Energy Coalition. I've served as the co-chairman of the Governor's Biofuels Coalition. And so I just hope to continue in some type of leadership role, whether that's in the public or private sector, to continue to push this country forward in terms of energy independence, and certainly reducing our dependence on imported energy. We spend $1 billion per day in the United States of America on importing oil and petroleum from the Middle East, and we've shown here in Iowa that we have better alternatives, and it's all about jobs. I really believe the president is right when he says his focus is going to be on creating jobs across America. And again, we've shown in Iowa that some of the low-hanging fruit in terms of new job creation is related to renewable energy. And we now have 8 wind energy companies in Iowa. We've created more than 3,000 really good-paying manufacturing jobs, making those towers and turbines and blades in our state. And I think other states can really replicate our model here in Iowa, and most importantly, provide opportunities and good jobs for Americans and Iowans that need them.
And yet House Republicans have filed a bill which would eliminate the Iowa Office of Energy Independence, the Power Fund, among other things, state funding for voluntary preschool, the Rebuild Iowa Office. Specifically, while you're on the topic of energy independence, alternative energies, how would these moves affect the state?
Well, first of all, those are just ideas. Those are proposals. Obviously, I don't agree with them. And so I urge your listeners to really stay engaged this legislative session. I was pleased, for example, yesterday at Chief Justice Katie's address that there were, a couple hundred advocates in the gallery who support the idea of an independent judiciary, who support the idea of 3 co-equal branches of government. So whatever the issue is, I think it's vitally important, starting right now, for Iowans to be very actively engaged in this legislative session, and to email and call and meet with their state senators and state legislators, because to Terry Branstad's credit, they've actually already significantly changed their position on the Power Fund. It now looks as if they've decided, at least a significant number of Republican leaders, to seriously consider, keeping that intact. What that means in terms of future investment, I'm not sure. But You know, I think this administration has already shown that the new administration, that they're open to perhaps modifying some of the positions that they took during the campaign. And that's good news. And hopefully that will be the case in some of these other areas, too.
Governor Chet Culver is with us, taking a break from packing his things to move out of the governor's mansion. If you'd like to get a question or a comment to the governor, 1-866-780-9100. In Des Moines, CW is joining us. CW, welcome to our program.
Hi, thank you for having me on. Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay, great. Just wanted to thank Governor Culver for his service. He's had a really tough job and a big pile of problems to deal with. Hasn't always received the credit he's been due. So thank you, Governor Culver, and Godspeed.
Well, thank you, CW. That's very kind of you. And, you know, as I said in the condition of the state address on Tuesday morning, there certainly has never been a dull moment. but that's okay. That comes with the territory. I'm so privileged and honored to have had the opportunity to serve as the 40th governor of Iowa. It's been an amazing experience and one that I want to thank the people of Iowa for giving me the chance to lead this great state that I love so much. And the thing I feel really good about, CW, is that we've overcome these obstacles and these challenges. I've dealt with literally 10 separate natural disasters on my watch, starting in February of 07 with that very serious winter snow and ice storm. But we were prepared. We've had a tremendous partner in the Iowa National Guard, first with General Ron Dardis and now with General Tim Orr. We deployed 4,000 troops in 2008 to help us evacuate 40,000 Iowans from 36 communities. And so I really feel good about the fact that whether it was a pandemic related to the H1N1 or the natural disasters or the economic downturn, we did everything in our power every single day to try to overcome these challenges. And I believe that we have. And as a result, the state is very well positioned moving forward. In fact, I think Iowa is leading America out of the recession and seventh lowest unemployment rate, $950 million surplus, AAA bond rating, number one in America in renewable energy, number one in terms of health care for kids and expanding preschool for our children. So, you know, we've kept our promises, gotten the job done, and it's been a real privilege.
Clint is joining us with Governor Culver from Cedar Rapids. Clint, good afternoon. Welcome to our program.
Hi. Thanks for letting me call. Governor Culver, this is Clint, and I help run Matthew 25 and block by block in Cedar Rapids. And I just wanted to say, from having walked through neighborhoods with you and seen the concern and the compassion on your face, I appreciate all of the focus and energy that you've given to flood recovery in Cedar Rapids. I think you've done a tremendous job. So thank you.
Clint, thank you for that call from Cedar Rapids. Governor Culver, you were governor, as we've been talking about, during the largest natural disaster in state history, during the largest economic recession since the Great Depression. You also faced re-election during an election year in which President Obama described the famous words as a shellacking for all Democrats. How much do you think you were simply a victim of the times?
Well, you know, I'm not sure in the final analysis, but what I'm keeping in mind is the fact that I was very fortunate in 1998 when I first ran for Secretary of State to have a tide that was really going in the right direction as far as my race was concerned, and then again in 02. And then in 2006, 2006 was a historic year in a lot of ways here in Iowa. The first time, for example, in 160 years that a Democratic governor was elected after a Democratic governor had been in office two terms. So it was the first time in the history of our state had 12 years of a Democratic governor. And to me, that's a critically important fact, just the chance to to win 3 of 4 statewide elections. I'm trying to keep it in perspective, and certainly that pendulum swings back and forth. I do feel good about the fact that we ran a very good race. We picked up key endorsements. We put together a broad-based coalition of hundreds of thousands of Iowans. And Iowans have made a decision to go in a little bit different direction, and I respect the will of the people. I really do, and I'm at peace with the results. Certainly, winning is a lot more fun, but life goes on, and I'm very optimistic and excited about the future. And it, you know, I want to tell Clint, who just called from Cedar Rapids, that I want to thank him and the individuals that are working as we speak in Cedar Rapids, including Matthew 25 and the block-by-block organization. The local folks like Clint and those, whether it's a faith-based group or a local Rotary, they really deserve the credit, I think, in terms of flood recovery. I've done my part, certainly, to try to secure funds. We've secured $5 billion in state and federal funds for disaster recovery, including $1 billion for Linn County alone, but it's the people on the ground like Clint and local leaders, the mayor, the supervisors, the city officials that are really getting it done. And it's been my privilege to partner with those individuals in those communities. And I feel great about the progress that we're making. But again, I urge the legislature and your listeners to make sure that flood recovery continues to be a top priority this session, because recovery is going to take several more years, but we're well on our way to a full and complete one.
When you look back over the 4 years of service to our state, what is the one thing that you have now second thoughts about the way you acted, something you would have done differently?
You know, I really haven't taken much time to second guess or wish I could have done things over again. I think we made the right decisions. They weren't always the most popular, but I had an excellent team, 38 extremely capable directors, and we just did the very best we could every day, keeping the state moving forward. And you know, we've learned a lot. Through these different crises, you get better, I think, mm-hmm. every time. We were tested, certainly, but I think our response overall was one that I hope all Iowans are proud of. I'm certainly proud of our record and the results. And sure, you know, we're human, we make mistakes, but we learn from them. And I think, as I said, my condition of the state, we're a better state having gone through these tough times. I think it's really brought us together as a people.
In your condition of the state of speech earlier this week, you drew the loudest cheers when you said the administration stood tall to protect the constitutional rights of all Iowans, regardless of race, gender, or sexual orientation. Republicans want the people of Iowa to vote on same-sex marriage. How do you see this issue playing out now?
Well, I really think that former Lieutenant Governor Peterson's comments were right on target at the top of the show. We think it's important that there are three co-equal branches of government. I think that Chief Justice Katie gave a very eloquent talk yesterday, a very informative history lesson. I'm an old government teacher, and I was very impressed with the tone and the content of his speech. I think he was very respectful, but at the same time, he gave all Iowans a very good lesson about civics and government and the role of the judiciary. And hopefully we can all learn from this experience. There are a lot of very strong feelings and emotions on both sides. But as Justice Katie said yesterday, his hope is that we can actually come together. And one of the things that he's proposed to do is to take the court on the road, to get out and meet the people of Iowa, to have a dialogue, to have oral arguments in places like Burlington and Cedar Rapids, And to try to, in his words, he said he hopes that the court can get to know the people of Iowa better. And I think the more information Iowans have about the role of the court, the responsibility of the judiciary and the third branch of government, the sooner we'll be able to kind of overcome this intense debate about these constitutional protections. But it's up to the people of Iowa. It's up to your listeners to weigh in on this issue, this session, and into the future. But, you know, I am very proud of the fact that we've stood up for civil rights in the Culver Judge administration. That is a principle, a value that is essential, I believe, to the state of Iowa. It's always been a part of our rich history is this focus on protecting individual rights and giving every Iowan the same constitutional protections, regardless of race or gender or sexual orientation. That's actually what's made Iowa such a wonderful place, a welcoming place, and I hope that we can build on that progress as opposed to take steps backwards. And I think we will at the end of the day. I really have great faith and confidence in the people of Iowa that they will choose to protect the Constitution. They will choose to respect the independence of our judiciary branch, and they will most importantly value the importance of constitutional protections for all Iowans.
Governor Culver, in the final 2 minutes on the lighter side, is there an everyday routine of the job of being governor that you think you'll miss the most?
Well, I will actually look forward to getting into a little more of a normal routine, taking my children to school at 7:20 in the morning and going to the YMCA and getting a workout in and, enjoying with a lot of enthusiasm and passion my next opportunity to continue to be a voice in terms of renewable energy in Iowa and across America. I'm looking forward to that lifestyle where there's a little more control of your day-to-day schedule. I've enjoyed the excitement. I've enjoyed the fast pace of being the governor. I've enjoyed getting out all over the state of Iowa. I've been to Cedar Rapids, for example, more than 100 times, 100 separate trips on flood recovery alone. So it'll be nice to actually be able to go to my kids' basketball practice and mm-hmm. to not miss games. And I can't wait to really just shift gears a little bit. But I'm not going far. I'm just going to, we'll be in our home in West Des Moines. And I'd love Iowa. I'm a proud fifth-generation Iowan. I want to stay here. And I think the future of Iowa is very bright. Our best days are ahead of us. And it's certainly been a privilege to serve as the 40th governor. And I want to thank you, Ben, and the Exchange and all the staff here. You have a great team, very professional. And I will miss this aspect of the job, and maybe on occasion I can get back and visit with you.
Governor Culver, thank you for those kind words, and thank you for this and the many other times in the past that you've taken the time to be with us here on Iowa Public Radio. We do wish you all the best. Governor Culver, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Coming up, more on today's theme, Changing of the Guard, after the break. Chuck Palmer, who will take control of Iowa's Department of Human Services, and Deb Durham of the Department of Economic Development. When we continue, this is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News over the noon hour. Great to have you with us. I'm Ben Kiefer. In our first half hour, we visited with outgoing Governor Chet Culver. Now, less than 24 hours before the changing of the guard in the governor's office. In the second half hour now, in our Changing of the Guard edition of The Exchange, we're going to talk to two department heads who will be taking their positions in the new Branstad administration. Debbie Durham joins us, incoming head of the Iowa Department of Economic Development, formerly president of the Siouxland Chamber of Commerce. Debbie Durham, welcome to our program. Thank you for joining us.
It's good to be here. Thank you for the offer.
Also with us, Chuck Palmer, the incoming head of the Department of Human Services. He held that same position from 1989 to 99, and in between that time was president of Iowans for Social and Economic Development. Chuck Palmer, welcome to you as well.
Great to be here.
Chuck Palmer, I'd like to start with you because yesterday, outgoing DHS Director Charlie Krogmeier sent an email to staff as part of the department's cuts mandated by the legislature last year. There's about $27 million less in your operating budget for the current fiscal year, a 9% reduction, which he said could result in dozens of layoffs or cutbacks in services. What is your reaction to the news? How will you go forward?
Well, one of the things I first really need to do is to understand the full impact and look at what alternatives may be. right now, I know the department had planned for some level of reduction, and that was in their planning. The actual level of reduction was higher than what they anticipated. So Governor Culver did identify the areas where those cuts would have to go. That's what the department put out. Now we just need to take a look and see what's possible.
Mm-hmm. What's your plan going forward, knowing you have these $27 million less? Where will you look for cuts?
Well, again, the department has already identified through some of the savings associated with the previous layoffs. So some of that is already in place, but that went deeper than what they anticipated. And since so much of that is personnel related, that's why you're hearing about so many layoffs. Again, I think we have to look at, are these the plans that have been put out, is really this lit, or are there some other options? And we'll be looking at, I'll start fully looking at that tomorrow.
Of course,
and then have comments next week.
Of course, when social services are cut back in lean economic times, critics of such cuts often say they are short-sighted, that by cutting back on resources to those in need, especially in your department, child care, support, assistance programs, that also from a purely economic point of view, cutbacks create much more costly problems in the future, unemployment, even higher chances of people landing in correctional facilities. Do you share these concerns?
Sure. I think that's all true. I think the other side is state government and our department. State government, I think, is about 50% federal money. DHS is about 60% federal money. So when many times when you cut a dollar, you're really cutting $2. And also, we find ourselves in mid-year. And so that gives us less time to plan and less time to really make the cuts. But clearly, these state employees are there doing a job, trying to help people, trying to provide services. And if you have less employees, then unless you can figure out some ways to do some things creatively or more efficiently, services are going to be affected. But this is also an opportunity to see if we can continue to come up with some creative things. The department has done that, and we'll continue to look for those opportunities.
Do you anticipate that people who receive Department of Human Services services will definitely notice this? You can't make this up, this kind of cut, up purely in terms of efficiency.
We have had to reduce the number of offices. We've reduced to some part-time offices. Yes, people will feel the size of these cuts.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a projected timeline when you will decide what action to take?
We'll certainly be talking about some options with the governor's office next week.
Okay. If you have questions in this remaining half hour, Chuck Palmer with us, incoming head of the Department of Human Services, 1-866-780-9100, the exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Also, of course, any questions for Debbie Durham, incoming head of the Iowa Department of Economic Development, 1-866-780-9100. Debbie Durham and Chuck Palmer, our guests in this half of the edition here on Iowa Public Radio. Debbie Durham, Governor-elect Terry Branstad announced that he and the Departments of Economic Development would begin overseeing the Office of Energy Independence and the Iowa Power Fund, which has made investments in renewable energy. The governor, current governor, Culver talked about this in the last half hour. House Republicans have talked about eliminating both. How will you proceed with those under your roof?
Well, certainly there is synergy between the two. I mean, when you look at where our growth opportunities are, clean energy is a growth platform. And there has been some good power fund through some working in partnership with our researchers and our local company. And so what I think it makes sense to move it over to the Department of Economic Development or new partnership. We'll continue to evaluate and monitor. I mean, that's going to be our role, to make sure that those loans are executed and those grants are executed the way they were supposed to be. And then I think from there we springboard on exactly how do we continue to propel forth this growth platform. There's going to certainly be some efficiencies. I'll do a thorough evaluation of what makes sense to be housed within our department, what makes sense to go back to DHS, and perhaps some of those things that maybe are still better served with the private sector. So that evaluation will go forward in a very short period of time, and it's a perfect time to do it because at the same time we're going to be introducing legislation early on in the session to really redo the department into a true partnership.
Mm-hmm. What about this talk, House Republicans, some of them, about eliminating both the Office of Energy Independence and the Iowa Power Fund? Governor Culver said there was a softening in that position he felt recently. Do you see that as well?
Well, what I see is I think that what they're trying to do is they're trying to deal with a very challenging budget before us, which we all understand and we respect. And as department heads, we're going to be asked to play a role into identifying where those savings could come forward. So I applaud the efforts that they're doing. At the same time, it's like anything. It's just like Chuck said, you got to be able to get in there, assess the situation, see where we're deploying our resources, and then come up with how we can save money to the state and do things differently. And that part of that is enhancing our partnership with the private sector.
Okay. 1-866-780-9100. Your questions for Debbie Durham, incoming head of the Iowa Department of Economic Development, or Chuck Palmer, incoming head of the Department of Human Services. 1-866-780-9100. Sean is joining us from Waterloo. Good afternoon, Sean. Welcome to our program.
Hi, thank you for letting me speak today. This is a message or a question for Chuck. My family has been on services from DHS, well, basically since the economy tanked, with like DVT and Title 19 and stuff like that. And I'm the only one working at this point. I'm a part-time job at a radio station. Been looking for another part-time job to go along with this and with many years of retail background, I'm basically feeling like I'm being told I have too much experience and they're not willing to even take me on, even though I'll take a pay cut, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's hard to find this other job to go along with it. My wife's in school to become a nurse, and we're looking at another 6 months before she gets her RN, which we're excited about. But these cuts, I'm kind of wondering if you could tell me and people like me, how much is it going to affect how we live day to day and having to use these services, and basically how soon? Because that's my worry, and I can take my answer off the air.
Sean, thank you very much for that question from Waterloo. Sean and those like him, how much will they feel these cuts, Chuck Palmer?
Well, if we're talking about the $27 million right now, what has been laid out would have a number of those cuts happen in the state institutions. Some cuts in the field, our field services and our staffing there, but these are not cuts to the Title 19 Medicaid program. These are not cuts to the FIP program. So many of the income support programs are not cut by these cuts. These are, in many cases, cuts that are going to affect monies that were put aside for the previous layoffs, as well as potential additional layoffs. Mm-hmm. Again, where it could affect you would be services out of our field office and the speed with which some things might be done.
On the positive side, Chuck Palmer, as you come in to lead this Department of Human Services in Iowa, what do you see that encourages you?
Well, first of all, I'm encouraged by the quality of people that are still at the Department of Human Services working very hard, and really, frankly, the entire workforce that has gone through a number of demands and a number of cutbacks over the years and until still are committed to providing quality service. I see some significant steps forward in the use of technology and the potential to do that even more fully going forward.
Any specific technology that you want to mention?
Well, they've they've centralized a number of things that used to be done out in, let's say, each region or in some cases each county. They've centralized the abuse registry. They've centralized a number of things and are using technology to address some of those issues. Made it much more efficient and, from what we can understand, still quality of service being delivered. So the creativity in using what's available to us has pushed us to get out of some of the old ways of doing business and find that there is still opportunity, and there will be opportunity going forward.
Debbie Durham, same question to you. What excites you most when you come in to head the Iowa Department of Economic Development, the twist that you think will be most exciting during your tenure?
Well, I'm energized by the task before us. I'm very energized by being able to set up a new structure that I think better enables us to fulfill our mission. I also think, like Chuck, that, you know, I've had the opportunity to work with those many of the people within the department. We have some very good people there, very professional. They know their job. I also think that Director Mills was the right leader for the right time. Certainly set up some organizational structure that the department was woefully lacking, and I plan on continuing that good work that he did. So I'm really going to be able to hit the ground running, as I already have, and it is because of this transition relationship the director and I have. And so we're ready to go. We actually have a prospect coming in that I reached out to in the last 6 weeks that will be in my office the first day I take office. So I think that's encouraging.
And I understand a big emphasis for you is, and also from Governor-elect Branstad, is to transition the Iowa Department of Economic Development to a private-public partnership. What does that mean? How is it different than what we have currently?
How it's different is it will definitely be modeled, and it will work much like most of developers are used to experiencing in their local communities. The Siouxland Initiative, the Siouxland Chamber of Commerce that I've had the privilege of being CEO for the past 16-plus years, is the very same model. You know, we have a chamber, we have an economic development arm, and we have a nonprofit arm, and I serve as CEO of all three, and each entity allows us to carry out different functions to fulfill our mission. What you're going to see coming forward is something that I'm very excited about. We've based it on a great deal of research around the country, taking those best practices, but yet creating something that's very unique to Iowa. It will allow a public sector part that will have all the transparencies, will allow us to deal with the incentive programs, and then you'll have the private part, which will allow us to raise money from the private side. And it's kind of doing the very best that government has to offer and partnering it with the very best that the private sector has to offer. I am very excited about this because, again, I think it gives us the ability to be nimble and flexible and carry out the mission that we have been placed before us.
Mm-hmm. And how do you decide? What guidelines do you use when you say we let the public part do what it does best and the private part do what it does best? What guidelines? How do you decide that?
Well, first of all, the public, any money that is given to a company for any incentives that is coming through from taxpayers will, again, have all the scrutiny and the transparency that government demands and should have. So none of that really changes. The due diligence is there. All of that is there. What it also, though, allows us to do is to set up a nonprofit where we can start raising funds that could help with traveling, with marketing, with certainly some of this Innovation Technology Council. I'm going to be attending their first board meeting, my first board meeting, not their first board meeting, on Friday. You know, they've also talked about their own nonprofit and talked to them about ways they can come into this model and accomplish what they want to get done. And that is that, you know, from fostering technology to startups is better suited for the private sector to do.
Governor-elect Branstad has set a goal of creating 200,000 new jobs over 5 years, a tall order. So how do you accomplish that?
Well, it's like anything else. When you take a big goal, you approach it one day at a time, don't you? You surround yourself, first of all, with the very best team that you can. You secondly make sure that we have the resources to be successful. And then we come to work every day managing to those results. We take it one day at a time.
And so you think that's a realistic goal to reach, not just a campaign slogan?
That is, I believe that it is achievable. I think you're right. It's a bold goal. Everybody knows that. But at the same time, we also are seeing signs that the economy is starting to turn. You look out there, industry and businesses, a lot of them are sitting on a lot of cash. You know, once they have some confidence in the government that there's going to be some consistency and stability, they're going to need to spend that. And they're going to spend it basically retooling their company. And that will also create jobs. So, again, I think that the timing is right. I think we're really to a tipping point. And particularly in light of what Illinois is doing. I mean, I basically reached out to my team yesterday and said, you know, every contact we have with every Illinois company, start calling them, because our governor is taking an entirely different approach than the Illinois governor of how they're dealing with their budget issues. We're going to create a pro-business culture here, unlike what Illinois is in the process of doing.
So what I hear you saying, if I understand you correctly, is you see where Illinois' budget ended up, the problems that they're having to dig themselves out of now. You're saying we need to avert that. Is that what you're using as a model?
Absolutely. What we have to do is start telling – we have to be selling our attributes. If there has been any criticism of the department that I've had is I think that the department has forgotten that they are a sales organization. You know, we are the gateway to the state. I mean, our website, everything we do should be in a sales customer service mode. And when we see border communities, our partners in the border, start looking at what they're doing, which is devastating to business, then we need to capitalize on that to say, we're taking a different approach. We're going to cut corporate income tax. We're going to work on reducing property taxes for commercial and industrial. At the same time, we're going to reduce the size of government. And with that, and in the midst of all that, we're going to create this department that is going to be responsive and extremely proactive.
Back to you, Chuck Palmer, incoming head of the Department of Human Services. We have just a few minutes left. You were head of the Department of Human Services for 10 years, from 89 to 99. What about that experience do you think will be most help for you this time around?
Well, I certainly have had the opportunity to fully understand the department, know what its responsibilities are, know a lot of the people who were there when I was there now. So that makes for a very smooth entry point for me. I've had the opportunity to work with the legislature, to work with this governor. So again, these are familiar. Mm-hmm. Some things seem similar, but also there are new challenges. This is a different time, and so there's some new learning as well. But I come in comfortable knowing the programs and knowing the people. Mm-hmm. In the department.
We've had 12 years since Governor Branstad was governor. You've had almost as much time since you've been head of the Department of Human Services. What do you think are the changes in that intervening decade that have happened to the department that you will have to learn, you will have to see as a challenge?
Well, state government itself has gone through a number of changes in terms of some of the downsizing that has gone on. Again, we talk about increased use of technology to help us get over some of those losses in personnel. The configuration of the service delivery is different today than it was at that point in time. Certainly programs like the Medicaid program has grown significantly. We have the challenges going forward in terms of health care, not only health care reform, but just the cost inflations in health care that we have to address as a state. We're in the middle of a very difficult recession, so the importance of getting 200,000 Iowans jobs back into the state is critical. It's a time that we got to help Iowans get back to work. Mm-hmm. So I think there are a number of challenges I think that are greater, but I think we have some solid beginnings to build on.
Debbie Durham, very quickly, we have less than a minute, but it's always been a problem of Iowa that we keep the young educated people. We do a great job of educating our young people, but stemming the flow of young educated people out of the state, keeping them here with good jobs, your secret to that or the thing you'll be looking to do that?
Well, how you do that is you simply provide the jobs. You create the jobs. I think our communities around the state have done a great job in investing in quality of life. It is about a sense of place. So we've got that. We're doing that. So now it's just simply to provide the jobs for them to come home to or to stay here for it. That's how you do it.
Okay. Debbie Durham, I want to thank you very much. Incoming head of the Iowa Department of Economic Development, Chuck Palmer, incoming head of the Department of Human Services. Thank you both for taking the time to come to our studios today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And The Exchange is produced by Alex Hoyer and Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Mitchell Schmidt. Technical support from Dennis Reese. In Des Moines, we had help from John Pemble. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio of The Exchange available by going to iowapublicradio.org. You want to tune in tomorrow at this time. We'll be talking about Iowa's new shall carry weapons law. We've talked about that earlier this week in other discussions. Tomorrow, a full hour, what's new in the Iowa shall carry weapons law. Tomorrow on The Exchange over the noon hour. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.